What if your next team workshop delivered the results you hoped for? And what if you can keep the momentum of the workshop and get everyone in the room to follow up even weeks after? I'm Miriam Hatness, and it's my mission to help you deliver workshops that work. Today with me on the show is Stefan Kinch. He's not only a management consultant, but he also runs a clown school. So stay tuned to learn from the clown how to use humor to drive results in your next team workshop. Hello, Stefan.
Hello, Miriam.
I am very happy and super excited to be here today in your clown school to interview you.
Welcome.
Yes, you have the fantastic mix of jobs or backgrounds. You're a management consultant. And you have a clown school, you're a professional clown, and you're doing multiple of other things. So every time I meet you, you're doing something different, I have the impression. And I would like to talk to you today about facilitation, what facilitators can learn from the clown. So first of all, maybe just to introduce yourself, if you would give yourself just one profession.
Ah!
This is an answer to my question already. If you were a hashtag, what would you be?
A hashtag? Oh my God, what is that? Something to eat? I had a feedback last week, on Monday, I was in a group. We had a group meeting, one of these boring ones, and to change it, someone introduced an exercise saying, just write on a post-it something you could say thank you to someone. So I got a collection of some post-its from the participants, and the one who wrote me, okay, Stefan, you are someone who doesn't take himself seriously and does things really seriously. And this, I think this really fits.
This well. Is a fantastic compliment.
Yeah, I like it.
So did you now put the post-it at a very prominent place, maybe in the bathroom every morning you see it when waking up and every evening when going to bed?
Yeah, absolutely. I undress, I see myself naked, I read it, and then I start laughing about myself.
I have the impression that you are taking my question not so seriously.
Oh, seriously.
Okay, cool. As a management consultant, how often do you switch into the role of a clown?
What is a clown? I think you could define clown in a way being connected to what your inner child is. So having this moment of feeling things and just letting go what your intuition is, mm-hmm. and just doing it. And I think this is like a permanent voice who is always there. And sometime I allow it more intentionally to get out of me, and sometimes it just takes over. And I remember 3 years ago I was in a meeting, and it was kind of the meeting where the manager was showing flip charts and PowerPoint presentations, and it started to get boring and boring and boring. And one moment I just stood up and I jumped out of the window of the conference room. I think that's where the clown took over.
Were you, in your career, were you first on the consultant track or first on the clown track? Or how did all these two things come together?
Well, I'm quite serious trained manager. So I'm a chartered accountant, and I am excellent in tracking numbers and auditing files and knowing what's a balance sheet and so on. And then I moved in other responsibilities, and I found out that I didn't have to juggle only with figures, with numbers, but also with people. And this was really, really challenging for me, because they don't work as linear as numbers do. So, and I think there's the clown saved my life, because I ended up one day in a clown workshop. I don't know, still don't know how. People told me, you have to do this, Stefan. So I took a week off. I don't know why, but I did it, and I found myself in a clown workshop, and that's where my life changed.
Funny, I also ended up in a clown workshop, and I don't know how and I don't know why. And I think you were my instructor.
Oh my God.
This was a fantastic experience. And I still cite the experience and what I learned, and I even wrote a blog post about it.
Thank you.
Yes. We'll come back to this later about my learnings from the clown. Before that, I would be curious to learn more about the transition. So you went to the clown workshop, and then what happened that you decided to do this professionally?
Well, I couldn't stop anymore. They told me, be funny. I tried to be funny. I was awful. I felt awful. They told me, okay, show your emotions. I had to go back in the evening and take and Google the word emotions, because I didn't know what they were talking about. And I think that's opened a path in my life which I haven't been connected to before. So I took some pleasure in being ridiculous and in not having to be perfect all the time. And that's opened something in me and for me, which was quite nice.
What can we learn from you and how to allow emotions or to find emotions?
Oh, well, let your emotions come out. I have no idea. Well, you have emotion. I think one thing I found out, that emotions is not only something negative, but also to laugh is an emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And just allowing yourself to laugh from time to time. And I think that's most time what happens when people meet. They start to talk and to laugh. And
mm-hmm.
Where can you conserve this or bring places in your daily life or in your business life where you have these moments of laughter? It's often it's a coffee machine. So the problem is, if you're in a meeting, there's no coffee machine. Or there's a coffee machine, but you must be quiet because you're disturbing. So bring in moments of breaks where you just can have these chats and laughter. I think that's the easiest way to learn about giving place to emotions.
And I feel that it's a slippery slope, because if you force, as you just said, you try to be funny, and the more you try to be funny, the less funny you are. I realized that I recently took an improvisation theater course, and I sucked so much because I tried to be funny.
Which is really funny for the others watching you, maybe not for you, but yeah.
Exactly, and that's maybe not what you want as a facilitator, and especially if you're standing in front of a group in a professional context and you try to be funny to provoke some emotions maybe or some relaxation in the group, you don't want to embarrass yourself. So how can you create these moments of laughter and openness without ridiculizing yourself?
Okay, let's see the facilitator. I would like to talk a bit about the circus. If you have mm-hmm. the circus, you have, and there I must go back a bit. Where came the clown from in the circus? And the clown came from the circus in the 17th century, where you had circus were mainly about shows, about animals with horses, elephants, and so on. And this shows there was a guy who had to go in the scene and take away the dung of the elephants, so mm-hmm. the shit. And one day he came to the audience, and he slept over something, so he nearly fell down. And the audience laughed.
Mm-hmm.
And the circus director did see this, and he said, okay, next day, just go back and do the same thing. And there this handyman, he understood, as long as people laugh, mm-hmm. he doesn't have to take away the shit of the elephants. So, and that's where the clown came from. And then, so there's a certain urgency for the clown to make things which will make people laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And to make people laugh, I think you have to see what is normal and what is out of the normality.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there will people like falling down in a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe people will laugh. Maybe others will feel very embarrassed. Maybe others will find it funny. Maybe the others will find it stupid or become angry. But you're touching emotions. And that's what the clown is touching emotion. Not to please the public, but touching emotions and being in contact with the public. If you go on, I think you're thinking, so that allows me to speak. After, in the circus, you had this, often there were families running the circus. So they had several performances, numbers to do. And they found out when they brought in the clown, they could have breaks. So they did their performance, which was really intensive in tension, because there's a risk being eaten by a lion or falling down from 10 meters high. So people, they hold the breath. And then the clown comes in and he helps the public to release the breath. And in the same time, the artists, they can have a little break, smoke a cigarette, drink a cup of coffee, change their clothes to come out for the next number. So that's a main function of the clown, is bringing in breaks. In the circus, you don't have all the time clowns, but you have very serious stuff, and then you have the clowning.
So would you structure a workshop similar to a circus performance, where you have the serious stuff and then you take breaks of laughter, of relaxation? And would you do this on purpose?
Absolutely, absolutely. This is, I told you about the breaks. Sometimes you don't need to do something special. If you just work very seriously on a subject, like say you have your agenda, you have a meeting of 1 hour and a half, and you say you have three main topics, and just take half an hour to work on the topic and make it very intense. And then you say, okay, just let's have a break for 5 or 10 minutes. Then people automatically, they need to release their tension. They will go to find each other, to have a little chat, to laugh. Emotions will come up automatically. And then you go back to the next topic and make it again serious.
How do you think can you use... So there are these meetings or workshops where you do have maybe conflict or where you do have tension. So the breaks might not be as relaxed as the ones that you just described. Do you think that you can use strategies from the clown to face this tension or even to release it?
Okay, what's the clown? Let's see, how does the clown work? The clown works to create the context. The clown has different phases or steps. The first is imitating. Imitating people, imitating postures, imitating words, imitating rhythms. That's when I'm in a circus arena. I need to have contact with the people. So I try to see how they look, how they feel. So I try to match a bit their emotions or their thing without judging. So and that's it's one thing to help people to just become aware. And often when you become aware, you have contact and you can move somewhere else. So one point of clown would be facing, just saying what he sees or what he feels in a situation. And that can help also to release.
Before we continue the show, let me take a brief moment to praise our sponsor, Session Lab. Yesterday was one of those days that taught me the value of my usual tools. I worked at my client's office and was denied access to unknown websites. So instead of using Session Lab's online agenda building tool, I tried good old Excel table way. After several iterations, I simply gave up. I finished the task from home, where I even found further ideas in the Session Lab's exercise library. So when you build your next workshop agenda, don't waste your time. Visit sessionlab.com and enjoy the ease of online agenda building.
Are there situations where you believe the clown must stay out of the room?
Yeah, I think you have. If you see the circus... And I work with the circus director. We have different roles. The circus director, he's there to set up the let's say the agenda, to find the numbers, to say who will perform at that, at what moment. And he will tell me as a clown, okay, there you come in and there you come in. He will not give me a free hand and say, just do whatever you want. So I think it's really, really planned. In the moments where the clown comes in, it becomes less controllable, mm-hmm. and he will do whatever he needs to do. In contrary to the other performers who are really more planned and prepared. So I think as a facilitator, you must see, are you the circus director or are you the clown? Or do you change roles maybe from time to time and saying, okay, this is a serious moment, this is a clown moment. But I think we also need to have moments where there is a strong working performance flow. And the clown doesn't have his place there necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
But he will have his place to break it up again, mm-hmm. at some moment. Yeah.
You have facilitated many workshops and worked as a consultant in very serious environments and also as a manager in very serious environments. From your perspective, why would workshops fail?
Mm-hmm. I think workshops, often it reminds us schools, and we all had our schools careers where it was often about you sit there, you listen, and you will be punished for talking or for errors you make. So I think this is something which will come up in our collective memory often when we think, mm-hmm. of it. So once people have another experience about fun, constructive workshops, I think this mindset will change. And then there are, I think it's a pressure of performance of time. We say, okay, we only have half an hour or 20 minutes and we have a strong agenda. So we want, mm-hmm. to bring through this agenda. And we completely forget that the chance to have people to meet, it goes much further than to exchange information. So, but if we set it up that we want to put through a lot of things, I think it's always the breaks who won't be done, because, mm-hmm. we say content is more important than breaks, and content is more important than personal relations. If I imagine also a circus, I would never have in mind as a circus director bringing five artists together and say, now you have 10 minutes and you just perform whatever you want. So I will have a responsibility to, mm-hmm. choose the best artists and to put them in the right way in order to make the show work. And then I can put some clowning in between. But meetings, sometimes I have the impression you just bring people together. And you just think, okay, they are together and they will work fine. this is not reality. You must really regulate what will happen in a meeting. And the more structure you give, the more easy it will be.
So how do you give structure? What is your way of making workshops work or making groups achieve the goals or make the best use of their time?
I take time to connect, and I know exactly where I want to go. It's like my clown performances. I write down the performance. I practice it. I re-practice it. I know what I will do. I know the gags. I know the timing of the gags. And then in connection with the audience, it might change. Because maybe I see, like you now, smile, and I say, okay, I'll just smile, but I don't want to go on with my agenda. I see we have a connection. You're smiling at me, I'm smiling at you. Maybe something else will come up. So the clown has this possibility of stepping out and, mm-hmm. and following intuition. And maybe my show will completely different this time. Mm-hmm. But I have prepared my show. And I think that's also with the workshops of meetings. I know exactly what should be the outcome. And if it's not clear for me, I work with the participants, what should be the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a method which I will use. And the method could be only, okay, we start and for 3 minutes we just note down what the objectives, and then we share, everyone gives an opinion, then we take a decision on the majority vote, and then we write it down and let vote again everybody. So this could be a really easy method.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe coming in the meeting, something will happen, someone is crying or someone is angry about, or I get new information, and or two people are not showing up. So, and I have to adapt.
Is this dealing with uncertainty, that something unplanned might pop up and change the entire agenda? Is this something you learn from the clown, or were you able to deal with uncertainty even before? I think dealing with uncertainty is not on the job description of many accountants, I guess.
No, as an accountant, you hate it. I spent nights trying to find €1 in a balance sheet, and today I don't care about it. I think that's really I learned from the clown. And because what you learn as a clown in your work, what makes people laugh, often failures. And what makes people really laugh is when you fail about yourself, because mm-hmm. you're taking yourself too serious, doing mm-hmm. something, and then you cannot do it. And so clown is a permanent training about working with your limits, without your ego, without what really sometimes hurts you, but what makes people laugh. So you are trained to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a great training, because when you meet people, there's not a lot what can happen which you didn't experience yet.
When you say there's nothing that can happen what you haven't experienced yet, what was the most surprising situation that you experienced?
In clown or in workshops?
In workshops. Maybe also in clown.
Mm, now you make me think. Can you talk a little bit so that gives me time to think?
Absolutely. I can, and drink, for instance... talk about the clown workshop that I did with you, and I was scared to death and thrown out of my comfort zone. And my biggest lesson was that a clown doesn't try to please, because the more we try to please, the more we are not taken seriously. And that's also a lesson that I learned in facilitation.
Okay, in what sense?
That I am taken more seriously if I'm just authentic and myself, and if I also allow my own emotions. So if I get impatient in a workshop, or if I don't understand, or if I have the impression that the group runs in a direction that we didn't agree, then I allow myself to say it, and then also sometimes not take myself too seriously to make the group laugh, and then it's easier for me also to stop them and to bring them back on track if
yeah.
I try to make it in a more funny way,
yeah.
and they would forgive me
mm-hmm.
better,
mm-hmm.
which is important.
Yeah, yeah. This is this team, but that's a live program, not to please. I think for the clown, it's we don't want to please the audience. We want to be in contact with the audience.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main thing. If I want to please, the audience will sense it. They will find that I want something from them, which I doesn't explain.
Mm-hmm.
They will sense that I want to give them responsibility over my success. And that will make audience not relaxed. They will start to feel tense, because they're getting responsibility they don't want to have. And if the audience is not relaxed, they cannot enjoy. So therefore, I must take the responsibility about my own job, about what I'm doing, failing or succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
That's about me. It's, I cannot say, okay, this was a bad show, but the audience, in this country, no, it doesn't really work.
They just didn't get it.
They didn't get it. So I must respect, I have a job to do, and whatever the audience is. And if there are people coming in, they are late, they are sleeping, they didn't have the information, they didn't read the agenda. That's the reality I must deal with. But it's not their fault giving them of doing a good job as a facilitator.
Mm-hmm. So how do you then still share the responsibility, or how do you incentivize and motivate them to work on the topic and have the responsibility to also come up with ideas or solutions, whatever the workshop or the meeting is for?
Yeah, that's all the art is about, connection. I need to be connected. So connection can happen in different ways. So already when people step up in a room, the workshop started already. It's not when the last one came in, it's when the first. So then if I want to make connections easier, often I let them have small discussions two and two about the topic. Before challenging them all, because I know of the stress, and I'm sure you were already in a circus one day where the clown took someone out of the public and asked him come out and then step up. And what happens is there are one guy who is stressed, and there are 500. We are really happy that it's not them. So and I think meetings is the same thing. It's you don't feel comfortable being taken out of your comfort zone. So how can you make it easier for people to connect? That can be just have a small talk with a neighbor. Maybe you use breaks also to say, okay, just take 2 minutes to think about a subject before discussing. And then you can go on. Other forms of connection, and this was really surprising. You told me what was the most surprising event. We had with a newspaper I work for it. We have a really, really important decision to take, because we had to change the layout of the newspaper and making it even smaller or bigger. We had to do because of technical problems we had with the press producing the paper. But nobody wanted to change, because we were really successful in the way we were. So this was an absolutely non-go. We had to do it. So, and in order to do it, we made a meeting where we brought in everybody, the board, the members of the staff, the people working on the layout, and so on, and to discuss. And my idea was, okay, give everybody the word and give letting everybody participate. I brought in a little juggling ball, and my rule was the one who has the ball in the hand can talk. It was used as a talking stick. But what I didn't expect before everybody was there, as the balls were lying there, people started to throw the balls at each other and playing. And this was really relaxing the atmosphere in the room. So I think playing games is something, and that's what the clown is about. It's playing games. But here I didn't introduce it. I think it makes the stress people had makes them connect to their inner child, and they started to play ball. And we had a lot of laughter before the meeting started, and it helped a lot.
Funny, because that was exactly also the exercise we did in the last clown workshop or clown lesson. How would you call it? Clown course clown that you invited me last week. Right?
Okay.
That was it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I learned something out of really serious business meetings, which I brought in the clown later on. Yeah.
Okay, so it was the other way around, because I thought that you did it even before in your clown workshops. And then this came up. In the business, interesting, because what I found fascinating was that your instructions in this clown lesson course was, okay, just play and do something, start with a very simple exercise, and then at one point some game will come up and you will start playing. And it indeed did, and there were these kind of childish laughters and giggling that came up between me and, until 10 minutes ago, total strangers. Yeah, that was a very good experience, and I'm happy to hear that this can also happen in a business environment. Nice.
Just try it. Bring a ball in in a room.
Yes,
something will happen.
And see what happens.
Yeah.
I like that. When you think of your own facilitation, when you prepare or plan a workshop, what is the one thing where you know it always works? Because you talked a lot about connection, about also getting the group to get into serious discussions. Talked about the connection between the members. So it's not only the connection between you and every member, but between them that counts. What is the one exercise that you do that usually works, that would be your silver bullet?
My favorite. Let's say that's a short one. If you want to get attention, there's this exercise counting to 20.
Mm-hmm.
So you count from 1 to 20. You use every number. If I say 1, you cannot say 2. I cannot say 2. Someone else will say 2. Someone else 3. I can't say 4 again.
Mm-hmm.
The objective is achieved when we are at 20.
Mm-hmm.
The point is when two people speak at the same time, we start again at 0.
So you really have to listen to have eye contact to the others.
Some groups, they start to organize and to say, okay, you say 1, you say 2, you say 3, which is a possibility.
Uh-huh.
Others don't get organized and they rely on eye contact. Mm-hmm. Everything is fine how you use it, but it will immediately get the attention of the group back.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can start working again.
So you would use this as a break when you have the impression that they're diverging, or would you start with this as a warm-up exercise?
Sometimes I start with it, especially if I see that people, they are not in the room yet. Often mm-hmm. you come in a meeting, but you have you bring in all your past or your worries about the future. Okay, will I be at home tonight at time? Will my wife love me tonight? did I finish the minutes? When do I do the phone call? And all these
mm-hmm.
things. So I need to bring people in the room
mm-hmm.
to be able to work. So this can be a nice thing to start. But it can also be after a break to bring in the attention again, or it can be a break in between, or
mm-hmm.
whenever, it will always work.
Most of the facilitators also in the interviews shared was that they would do a proper check-in round in order to get the people in the room and mentally present. Is this something you do? And if so, how would you do it?
So exercise I like most, it gets you really personally involved immediately. So let's present ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then people start already, I say, no, stop, you don't need to present. Just we let the other people tell us about all your qualities you have. So I would say, okay, Miriam, I like her because she's really smart and has a lot of courage bringing in this podcast. and then ask the next neighbor to say something nice about you. So
mm-hmm.
your qualities, what he knows or what he could imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just make a round, some people presenting you, presenting the next one. So everyone will get some of his qualities and compliments.
Ah, it's like a warm shower.
It's a warm shower. Tahiti douche, I call it sometimes.
Tahiti douche, nice. Would you also do this with a group that doesn't know each other so well? So that you, because you said either real compliments or what you could imagine. So do you think it would work in a group of strangers?
Absolutely. You have an immediate check if you see someone new.
Mm-hmm.
You start to form an opinion about him. And if, as a facilitator, you orient his opinion in bringing out the qualities, they will do it. And it can be, I like your haircut or the way you are dressed, or I imagine that you are really accurate in your bookkeeping. So,
mm-hmm. And this immediately brings in a sense of trust and respect for each other, and maybe also a curiosity to see whether it's actually true what I thought you would be.
Yes, and you include yourself as a facilitator, so you are getting the compliments of the group.
Oh,
and,
I like that.
And that helps you to know what qualities you can rely on working with the group.
And maybe also what they want to see in you, so maybe also the qualities that they expect you to have as a facilitator.
I'm not sure about that, because about feedback, you see in the other person what you think about yourself, not about the other one.
Yeah.
So you get information about the people who are in the room and what they would like to be.
Exactly.
More than that what they want you to be.
Mm-hmm.
But having an information, for example, I often got feedback, okay, you are really calm. And for me, calm as a manager, that was never a quality.
Boring.
And yeah, and I found out that calm is a great quality as a manager, mm-hmm. because when I am relaxed and calm, that helps people to relax too and to be calm. When we are relaxed, we are open for new information. When we are stressed, we are not open for new information. So I found out that it can be a quality.
And this is so interesting, what I realized, how much we use labels without questioning the understanding of the labels. So when you say calm, I hear boring. But when he says calm, he actually hears interested, open for feedback, listening. Mm. So I also learned to really ask the questions when I'm in a group discussion. When someone says something, uses a word like calm, like interesting, like, I don't know. I really take the time and ask a question, okay, so what do you understand by it?
Yeah.
And I recently had a discussion, very interesting, with someone who works in an international institution, and he used the term Autobahn. The German highway. And he understood by Autobahn, it's a fast track.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very efficient, it's very good quality, and you can get from A to B in a minimum of amount of time.
Okay.
And the feedback he received was, oh, we cannot use Autobahn because in some countries you have to pay for the Autobahn, so it's not for everyone, it's restricted, it's dangerous, people are not behaving according to the rules.
Yeah, that's because why clowns don't use too much words. Because life is so, people, everyone understands other things.
Mm-hmm.
So, and therefore I work a lot, and that I learned through clowning, how to influence an audience without speaking, how to make them stand up, sit down, turn around, without using words. And this is really interesting, but as a facilitator, make experiences. How can you influence people, making a break just by standing up and leaving the room? Or how can you influence them being more attention? How can you influence someone of calming down? You mm-hmm. can just approach him or stand behind him or have a look. So there are plenty of possibilities you can work without speaking, which are really, really effective.
And you need a lot of self-confidence and courage to do that. I just imagine when you said you can just stand up and leave the room to announce the break, I'm sure this is very effective, and I bet that it creates a lot of uncertainty, this moment of what the hell is going on here in the group. What's your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. It creates uncertainty. That's clown, and that's also why people or children sometimes are afraid of the clown, because mm-hmm. they never know what he will do next.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends. Do you want to create uncertainty, or do you want to get people a bit out of their habitual functioning?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want to create something else? But the same example, using nonverbal clues, you can also introduce. And that I did with a group where I introduced some sign language.
Mm-hmm.
And we trained this. We had some signs of being, I want you to speak louder. We had signs on, I want silence. So mm-hmm. everyone lifts up his hand. If someone sees someone lifting up his hand, he does it as well. And then at one moment, you have all the hands lifted up and they are silent. So these are some possibilities you can introduce in a group. Mm-hmm. So it will take away this uncertainty, mm-hmm. but it allows you to lead without talking.
I can perfectly see that. I will try it out. Thank you. I just realized that time is passing so fast.
Okay, you said a show of 3 hours, no?
Yes, at least. I think we could talk until tomorrow. Maybe our audience doesn't have so much time.
They're all sleeping now.
Already? So it's time to wake them up. So if they just wake up now and you want them to remember one thing from the last 40 minutes, what would it be?
So one thing, bring in your magic companion in your workshops, a juggling ball, and see what will happen if you just put it on the table or in front of someone. And if there are games showing up, so that's a good sign.
Love it. Thank you, Stefan.
Thank you, Miriam.
So, last but not least, when our audience now thinks, oh, wow, I want to learn more from the clown, or I want to hire Steph for my next team workshop, strategy workshop, or just take a clown workshop that I can highly recommend to everyone listening to this, Luxembourg is also worth a visit. How can they find and reach you?
I have no idea. But if they want to find me, they will.
Great. And I will put some clues in the show notes. Thank you so, so much for sharing.
Thank you, Mira.
Thank you for staying tuned and listening to the show. I appreciate your attention as I know how busy you are. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe and engage by sharing your comments and thoughts. And visit workshops.org to download the one-page summary. I'm looking forward to seeing you back at the next episode, and I wish you a fruitful day.